Hello, and welcome to my podcast, John Scott Lawton's English You Know. In this episode, I interview David Cabezas Ferreras from Andalucía in Spain, based in Malaga, and we talk at length about the nature of English language learning and English language teaching, some of the important elements that go into that process between individuals or groups developing their language skills, and we focus on the need for building a relationship between people, of which language learning is a part, in order to communicate effectively with each other. We do have some sound issues with the recording over the internet. I'm in a particularly difficult, hard environment, so the sound quality is a little bit echoey, but we hope you persist with this because, in a way, that is what developing listening skills is about, coping with sometimes not 100% pure or accurate sound. So apologies for that. We do hope you enjoy the podcast. There's a lot of content in here, and we really do hope that you'll be in touch with us, either myself or David, if you wish to develop your English language skills, or just raise any matters of interest or any questions you might have, which you'd like to contribute to the podcast. Thank you very much indeed. So hello, David. I'm delighted to see you again. We did have a bit of a pre-discussion, but this is going live on the record for the podcast. David Cabezas Ferreras, I'm delighted to see you. I think we're going to have a really interesting conversation. It's I'm certainly older than you, but two experienced English language teachers talking about their work. But hopefully we will make this very interesting, not just for teachers, but particularly for advanced level students who use this, or advanced level learners or users of the English language who use these podcasts to develop their listening skills. That's what the purpose of this podcast is. So let's get into it. And first of all, tell me who you are, where you are, and what you do.
Okay. Thank you, John. First of all, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. And well, as you said, I'm an English teacher. I am based in Malaga, and I work mainly with Spanish professionals that need English to communicate at work. They may need English to develop in a personal level.
David, tell me, one thing I sometimes struggle with is finding new students. Tend to get them through word of mouth. People tell each other, and that's the good way to grow. What approaches do you have to market? How do you promote what you do to people? How do they find out about you?
Yeah, that's a great question. Before the pandemic, I used to have like a physical academy. So there were people that just passing by and so on. But after the pandemic, I closed it down and I decided to move online. Mm-hmm. And I think that nowadays, my main source of clients is, as you said, word of mouth. But I have pretty good reviews on Google Maps. I think that a lot of people come to me because the reviews, mm-hmm. because they check learning English in Malaga or how to improve my English in Malaga. So it's like a lot of local people that, even though I'm online academy, they still want to improve their English and they check it online. I'm one of the first academies that pop up in terms of reviews, not because of the Google, just because of the reviews. Mm-hmm. in the search. So I think that is one way that people get to me. And also word of mouth, that is also related to the reviews. Because at the end of the day, it's like clients that say, I'm happy with you. So they refer to different clients and so on.
Yeah, it's a very interesting marketing perspective, isn't it? Word of mouth can go both ways. If you give a good service, that's fine. People tell their friends. But if you give a bad service, they don't just tell their friends. They tell everybody else they can think of.
Yeah. But I think that it's an area that they should improve. Yeah. And I have started recently. I didn't have like Instagram, LinkedIn. I started like, I think that 1 month ago.
Okay.
And I really like it, to be honest. At the beginning, I was really skeptical about marketing. I think that in my time, in the past, marketing was like pretending something that you weren't. And mm-hmm. now I have to say that people are more authentic. Not everyone, but I think that this idea of authenticity, or at least some people trying to pursue authenticity, marketing, and I really like that because it's a platform where you can share, it depends on the platform, but sometimes you can share your classes, you can share what you do, because otherwise how can people figure out what you do in your sessions? You can tell, oh, okay, I'm a great teacher, but what does it mean? So mm-hmm. then you can give them just like a, you know, like a taste of what your class is. So I think that yes. this is an interesting thing about your about marketing.
Yes. Later on, we're going to be talking about ChatGPT and how that's used in marketing. I've used mm-hmm. it myself just to see if it works. And we'll talk about it in terms of language development, because I think many marketeers, people involved in marketing, and many of my students are in some way involved in marketing activities, whether from retail or other parts of business and commercial activity. Marketing is a multi-layered, there are many facets to it, many aspects to it. And I think that the new technology and digital promotion is just one part of that. Okay, mm-hmm. let's come back to the language teaching then. And can you contrast for me what's different about what you used to do in your physical academy, your school or your building, versus now what you do online? Have you noticed any difference in your approach?
Interesting question. Well, I think that I'm all the time changing my approach. I would like to think that I'm improving my approach, but I started teaching English pretty late, and I started teaching English in like traditional academies where you had to prepare people to get a certificate, which is fine, but sometimes it was more like a factory rather than an academy. So it was like, you know, you have 20 people in the same place, they just want to get the B1. Whereas nowadays it's like more like individual work, it's more tailored, and I do try to help every professional in a different way. So mm-hmm. it's more like coaching rather than teaching in that sense. I also studied like, I am a certified neural language coach, which I think that it helped me a lot
yes.
to polish this idea of doing something different, because I think that I have been doing something different mm-hmm. in terms of teaching throughout my whole life than traditional approach, mm-hmm. but I didn't find the name. And it's also oh. something related to marketing. So now it's yes. like, I have a name for that. Probably you need a different name for every different teacher, mm-hmm. but I think that I'm quite happy with this idea of coaching and trying to find what are your needs, your personal goals, and how can I help you to get these goals?
Yes. I've for a while now described myself as an English language coach. Mm-hmm. And that's, for me, it's double-edged, because although I'm not a qualified coach in the sense of mm-hmm. I'm not a member of the International Coaching Federation or anything, for many years I was a senior manager within industry, and particularly the education and educational management industry. So I feel I've got a lot of experience, which I use as a mentor, and I know there's a clear distinction between mentoring and coaching. But a yeah. lot of my work was coaching others, asking them questions for them to reflect, to move on within their career. If you align that with language development and linguistic development, what is it that you want to use language for? Which I have to say, some students are surprised when I ask the question, but I say it's really important that I know that, because as you say, you can either have a factory where you go through from stage one to stage 10 and you do 20 weeks doing a program and you get a certificate, fine. But actually, did it meet your needs? What did you learn? What did you do?
Yeah. Totally agree. I would say that the first meeting with our prospects or our clients is the most important. It's where you have to dig in about what are their needs, their motivation, which is very, very important, their problems, and also the stereotypes or even their small traumas that they may have related to language. Here in yeah. Spain, I think that my clients is really, really common, this kind of complex related to languages, because in general, we're really outgoing. As you can see, we are really talkative. So mm-hmm. then when it comes to speaking another language, it's like we are not really at ease with not being as fluent as we are in our own language. Yes. And I think that it's also related with the traditional educational system here in Spain, that the mistakes are really punished here. Okay. I think that this is something that backfires in most of my students.
Yes. I would say there's a similarity there with Slovak, because mm-hmm. Slovak learners of English that I've worked with, many of them want to be corrected. And yeah. say, well, you know, we're going to talk later, I think, about the level of correctness that one needs in language in order to communicate. But let's build up to that. but they expect to be corrected. They want to be corrected, as if that's almost a cultural thing, that perfection is really important. Certification is really important as well. Acknowledgement that you have reached a level, that kind of external validation is very necessary here. You can't really get a job in Slovakia unless you can prove with a piece of paper your ability to do it, that you have been assessed as able to do your job and that you are, quote, professional or qualified. So you put those two things together, expectation and external validation, they're very big driving forces, aren't they, for a learner to have to come to you with before you even begin a conversation about what is it you want to do.
That's great. Totally agree with what you have just said. And that's why I think that coaching is really important word here, because sometimes it's like they have English inside themselves, but they don't know. It's like they need somebody who tells them, okay, your English is fine. I mean, it's fine. You're a Spanish speaker speaking a second language. You're speaking English. You are able to get your message across and also focus on your message as well. But sometimes it's like we pay too much attention to our English, which is a tool, a fantastic tool that we need to care, to look after it, to polish. But at the end of the day, you have to work with your message. Yes. And sometimes people are really concerned about the language and they are not like appreciating what they have. Mm-hmm. And that's why coaching sometimes is just changing the view, changing the perspective that they have. Sometimes they may need more help, but sometimes with few sessions, there are really high level speakers that they have a lot of problems communicating because of their mindset.
Yes.
I think that mindset is really important. So they don't need like hundreds of sessions of hours of studying because they already have the English. They just need the confidence.
Yes. And that confidence. That confidence, again, we'll speak about, because that for me is the most critical. I was having this very discussion with somebody yesterday. Confidence is the driving factor for me of everything, both the driver for the motivation, but also the way in which you can assess for yourself as a learner, whether or not you feel more confident now after a few sessions, because that should be for me the biggest outcome or output from the learning process. Do you feel more confident in using your language?
Wow. That's really, really important. And sometimes it's challenging. For me, it's one of the most difficult things. Like when you have, is the positive thing about certificates is or exams, is like you take the exam and they realize, okay, I got it. I'm a B1, I am teacher. But when it's about being fluent, really difficult to define what fluency means. That's why I try to work a lot with awareness, try to make them aware of their progress, try to make them aware of their improvements and also their needs. So it's working a lot with yourself. And it's fantastic when a student comes to you and tells you, oh, David, I have realized that I'm really confident. I feel more comfortable in the meetings. I can do presentations. It's like they need to do everybody.
Yes.
Like something to assess that they are doing better. So I think that is really, really important, this kind of metacognition, I think that is called.
Can we drill down into some of the particular problems Spanish language speakers have when using English? We're just focusing on that juxtaposition. I know that clearly Spanish speakers need to use many languages, but here we're talking just about English. And we've got this psychological belief that their English is, quote, not good enough, even though it may well be there inside them. There are matters of expression. So what is it that you find generally? I know it's difficult to generalize, but some of the stereotypical aspects, and then we'll dive and we'll go drill deeper into the reasons why this is so linguistically. But what is it that learners present to you that you say, okay, let's look at your use of English?
I can really relate to my students, not because I have listened to them carefully, that I have, but because I was there. Because I learned English pretty late when I was 33 years old. I didn't study English at university. And in fact, I didn't like English back then. Why I didn't like English? Because it was the same system that they studied. It was based mainly in activities like filling the gaps related to grammar and vocabulary, which is fine, but you need the context. You need to use in context.
Yes.
The problem is that they have studied English sometimes for 10 years, 15 years in the traditional system. When they travel to UK, or surprise, they feel that they cannot say a word. They cannot communicate because they haven't tried before. It's not like like a really something really strange. It's like you have to practice, you have to learn by doing. Mm-hmm. So they have problems with communication because they haven't practiced communication. So it means as well that they are not really confident. We come back to the topic that we mentioned before about communicating.
Yes.
And also they have just listened to people on TV, mainly native speakers talking. They have probably sometimes the wrong role models mm-hmm. because they want to be like them. It's great to want to improve and want to have a specific accent. I think that is great to have like an accent that you want to get or something like that. But you have to remember that you are a Spanish person speaking a second language. And also you are David or you are John. So it's something in you that is you. So yeah. You don't have to lose that in order to speak a second language. You can add that to the second language. You maybe need to add David to the second language. No, 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 remove David from the equation.
Yes,
so it's
I hate
like
this.
Kind of factors that are important in their problems.
Yeah, I hate this phrase that's used, and I understand why it's used, but I just, something about it really annoys me. Accent reduction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It is literally reductionist. It's removing, it's yeah. taking yeah. away from you. Well, as you said perfectly, why don't we add to that? Add the color, mm-hmm. add the flavor, add the character, right. add the personality into the language, because mm-hmm. that's what makes English so rich, that it is used totally. All around the world.
Mm-hmm. I really like to expose my students to different accents.
Yeah.
Not just British or American. We have Jamaican, Indian, Italian speakers, French speakers. And then, as you said, it's beautiful, the richness of the language. And then you can feel more comfortable because you see that there is like a huge variety of accents and you have your accent and you can fit in. So yes. accent is not a problem as long as people can understand you.
Yeah.
Because again, we are talking about communicating. That yes. we don't have to lose the focus of our aim, that is get to know each other.
And I think offline or in our previous discussion, I've spoken about the fact that, and I think I've mentioned this on a previous podcast, no two human beings can ever communicate at the level of 100% accuracy. For me, even for a few seconds or a few minutes, within a few seconds, we've lost it. You know, I think I had this yeah. discussion with Fabio. I could use one phrase, one word, I could use or mispronounce something, or I could accent something very strongly. And you would miss it, and then your mind would be distracted because you're thinking, what did John just say? And then yeah. we've proven the point. We cannot communicate at 100%, and we should not expect to.
But you have said that's something that is very interesting. Also, communication is about connection.
Yes.
Also, you need to create an atmosphere, an environment where the listener is at ease. Mm-hmm. So if the listener is at ease, he wouldn't mind asking, sorry, I didn't get that.
Yes.
It has to be both ways. Yeah. And it's really important also for native speakers. So it's like, okay, guys, if you don't follow me, just interrupt me and tell me to repeat. So you have to create that. And also listening is a huge part of communication because yeah. sometimes we forget about how important listening is.
And hence the podcast. That's why we have the podcast. Yeah.
That's great. Yes, that is really, really useful.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's keep on that frame, that phrase about connection and relationships, because that is why we have language. Again, with Fabio, I spoke about Cepellini. We talked about this very old, I got all my dates wrong, but there was a 500,000-year-old structure found in a river, near a river in Zambia. And the fascinating thing about this wooden structure, this wooden building, very small platform, actually, was that it could only have been made by more than one person. It was definitely man or woman made, but they couldn't work out how it was done because they thought at that time human beings didn't have language. Can you imagine? And then yeah. they realized, no, they must have had language because they would have had to cooperate. They would have had to function together to build this structure to make it solid, to make it work. You know, even if it was hold that piece of wood while I hit it or touch there or hit here, something to make this big wooden structure function as a building. Mm-hmm. So language has been around for ages. The need to communicate has been around for ages. I think somehow, somewhere, human beings, my favorite phrase at the minute, have forgotten how to be human. And mm-hmm. language and communication is part of that. I don't think the COVID pandemic helped us. I think it got in the way.
Definitely
Even
not.
Though we mediated it with online opportunities, it's not the same.
Mm-hmm. But you have said something that is really important as well, that is the intention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really want to communicate. You need to,
yes.
you need to communicate. It's really, really important. And sometimes we forget that what is our intention when we communicate, why we communicate. That's why the message for me is really important. Why do you want to say? What do you want to convey? What do you want to transmit?
Yeah.
And also, what do you want to understand from these other people that you have in front of you? So I think that is really important. Attitude is really important in communication.
Yes.
And you have attitude, as you said, sometimes you can communicate even with body language.
Oh, so, yes.
I mean, you need to get by. I teach my students sometimes when they have really basic English, and they say, okay, I want to speak perfect English. Yes, but tomorrow you have to go to a meeting and sell jackets, let's say.
Yes.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Just show the jacket. Just show the label. I mean, it's communicating. It's not English. Perhaps it's not, but we are communicating.
Yeah, what are you trying to do?
Yes, that is the idea.
Yeah, I'm living that at the moment. I'm in Slovakia. I've been in Košice, which is a beautiful city to the in the east of Slovakia. And my Slovak, spoken Slovak, is still, it has to be said, limited, because I don't either take the opportunity or have the opportunity, there's a difference, to use it, because I spend most of my day or night online teaching people in English. But, you know, there are ways and means I can communicate what I need. A lot of it is hand gesture, smiles, sometimes not a smile, something else like a frown, but it's communicating to the person that I need something from them, or I want to give them something like money to pay for something. And there are these seemingly international symbols. You know, why is it we pretend to be writing on a piece of paper for a bill, you know?
Yeah, I remember when I immigrated to UK, as I said before, I was 33 years old and I didn't speak English. At the beginning, the first thing that I learned in English, it was like body language, because people were talking to me and I was, oh my God. And I was just, but I realized how important is our expressions. I was really paying attention. So when you don't have a language, always you get something. Always when you miss something, you learn something else. So I learned, and I think that is very useful for me. I have just realized right now for teaching, I realized how important is the way that they express themselves, their gestures, the body language, because I didn't understand them. So I spent my time trying to figure out, this guy is happy or he's annoyed.
Yes.
Okay, so little by little, everything just made sense. But it was like the first thing that I learned, relationship communication.
Well, that's very contextualized again and very individualized, because I have a face for podcasts. I do not have a face for YouTube or vodcast.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, you know, I'm not the world's most handsome guy. I know that. That's the feedback. But, and the problem rather, is that I have a face that looks angry, even when I'm happy. I mean, I don't smile very often because I don't like my teeth. So I'm self-conscious. I try not to smile, because I don't want to expose my teeth. That actually just makes things worse. I look like I'm drowning. So people think I'm angry, even when I'm neutral. Even when I'm not angry, I look angry to some people. So as you say, communication, nonverbal communication is so, I'm trying to be happy now, but nonverbal communication is very, very powerful, and it can mislead us.
Yeah, totally. Well, in general, that's why the more areas of communication you control, the better.
Yes.
So it's body language. There are a lot of research nowadays about breathing and tone, pace. Yeah. So it's everything together. And this kind of trendy word right now that is holistic.
Yes.
Everything's be holistic. But in this case, probably it's about everything. When you are communicating, it's about not just your voice, your language, your tone, your accent. It's about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Present is important as well.
And as you say, one thing can compensate for another. So if you do, as you said, the guy or the woman trying to sell jackets, the jacket, let the jacket speak for itself. You know, in fact, you be quiet, show them the jacket. Oh, my father would have said, because he used to sell cars, he used to say 90% of the job is to get them to sit in the car, and the rest is get them to turn the engine on.
All right.
Okay. So get them to wear the jacket, and you have got a good chance of selling the jacket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's totally true. Yeah.
Don't talk about it. Let's focus on this concept of English for business or business English.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, there could be a difference, but people say to me, I need to improve my business English. If mm-hmm. somebody came to you and said that, maybe first of all in Spanish, you know, I've got to improve my business English. What triggers, what does that say to you when they ask you or tell you that that's the instruction, that's their intention?
For me, it's too generic. I need to know more about that. What do you mean by business? So, I mean, you need, I mean, every person is different. Needs are different. It's not the same preparing a class for a vet than for a IT.
Yes.
Here. So, I mean, both may think that it's English for business, but it's not the same.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
probably what they have in common for me is communication, mm-hmm. because they need to communicate. For me, it would be more like English for communication or to communicate rather than English for business. And yes. It's the common pattern that I have in all my clients. They want to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Then they may need a specific vocabulary that usually related to their business, which is important, but also related to their life. Because at the end of the day, I tell my students that, I mean, everybody ends up talking about themselves. So you don't need to control all the words around the world. You need to master your vocabulary.
Yes.
So that's really important to know yourself properly in order to
build outwards.
Yeah. Yeah. So then master your vocabulary, the language that you use in Spanish, and then it will be easier for you to communicate in English.
Yes. The challenge, I think, for many of the students I work with is they're starting jobs or wanting to move up or progress within jobs in companies who may not be even Slovak. They could be German, Austrian or Czech companies, but where English is used as the lingua franca or the common language. And I'm writing about this with a university professor at the moment. There are many challenges here because for me, there is a danger that the use of the English language, don't like to use this word at the moment, but it can be used as a weapon, can be used as a barrier, let's say, to people's progress. In other words, if you can't present in English, you can't get a job at a senior level. How do you address that kind of socio-political problem that there is, or sociolinguistic problem, that English could be used as a barrier against people?
Wow, that is interesting. I think that companies should evaluate what is the most important for them. Because if companies are going to miss a fantastic employee because of their English, well, probably this employee may not be looking at the right company.
Yeah.
So we are talking about values. So if you have a person in your job that has some problems with any aspects of their day-to-day tasks, what you have to do is help them.
Mm-hmm.
So no stop them from promoting, because what is the most important skill that they have? Probably it's not English. If they are IT professionals. So if he's a fantastic or she is a fantastic programmer and you stop her from promoting because of her English, well, the problem is yours, mm-hmm. because you are missing a fantastic asset for your company.
Yes.
So I think that, again, you said a word that is really nice, that is cooperate. Who should cooperate? Companies should cooperate with employees to make their life easier, and then it pays off.
Yes. And for me, it's, as you said, to invest in that talent, to give them the support. I mean, it's a bit of a self-promotion for we English teachers, but it is about giving professional support and advice, as you would for any other technical skill,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to empower them to be able to do those things at a higher level.
Totally. But it works both ways.
Yes.
I had an interview with James Weber,
mm-hmm.
that has a fantastic program that is called Say What.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting because he tries to help native speakers to communicate better at work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great idea too, because
mm-hmm.
What they want is try to raise awareness that sometimes it's not the problem, it's not just the problem of communication of the non-native speakers. Also native speakers can add something to the communication, avoiding jargon, slow down. So that's great, because it's not about looking for who is the responsible, it's looking to cooperate.
Yes.
So I can help you, and I can help you, I can help everybody here
mm-hmm.
to communicate better. That
yes.
is the idea.
And that again points to the problem that I'm discussing in this paper, that we do isolate, and therefore we make a target of people who are second language speakers, because we ignore the fact that we all, first language speakers or not, native speakers or not, need to improve our communication skills. And just by isolating second language speakers, or those who don't speak English as well, we're making them the problem, which is not the issue. You know, that's not the case.
It happens that you communicate with people who speak speak the same language than you, and you don't communicate at all. So yeah. I would change the approach of the companies and trying to promote communication in general in the company, within the company. So it's not just trying to help people to speak better English, trying to speak better in general, to communicate better. And then if you change the approach, people could be more integrated and wouldn't feel as targeted as you mentioned, because no, what we are doing here is not trying to help you to improve your English. We are trying to improve the communication of the company in general.
Yes.
If you look at it from this perspective, it's more inclusive. Everyone has to improve.
Yes.
Everyone has something to say.
And that can spill over into improving your service to customers as well, because if you improve the internal communications, then hopefully your external communications, particularly with your customers or prospects or potential customers, will improve as well. And that's where we come back again, full circle to marketing.
Totally.
It's totally about communication.
Totally. And that's why I really like this idea of non-violent communication that was developed by Marshall Rosenberg. And it's this idea that when you communicate, then you have to identify your needs, your feelings, and they try to, you know, create your request in a way that you also identify the needs and feelings of the other person. Yes. And it's English, it's Spanish, but it's communication. It's not just the language, which is a tool again, but also all the aspects of communicating that is also respecting and understanding the other person that is in front of you.
In the literature, they're referring to this now as relational communication, aren't they? That there's a relationship between you and me, you're a Spanish first language speaker, I'm an English first language speaker. We're using English as our common language at the moment, our lingua franca. Interesting, we use a French phrase for that. you know, we are developing language in order to build a relationship, whether it's professional or commercial, or because I want to sell you something or convince you to come on my podcast. It is, we're building a relationship. And that happens in our personal lives as well, where, and even on a global level, without even thinking about what's happening in the world at the moment, so shocking and terrible, but it comes back to a couple of things, principally failures in communication, but also a lack of emotional intelligence, where over hundreds of years, we've never fully grasped what's going on between various communities. And we've ignored things to the extent that they're now almost beyond repair. Mm-hmm. That's the desperate view for me. But there are, you know, clearly problems where we fail. Come back to my point about the Zambia River and two human beings managed to build something 500,000 years ago, which still exists today because they communicated.
Yeah.
And nowadays, our failure to communicate is having global significance, I think.
Yeah, and the problem is not the tool. Again, it's the attitude, intention. You have the tool. What do you want to do with the tool is a really important question we ask ourselves, because we can cause a lot of harm with children, for example, with friends, every time that we use communication in a wrong way. That's why we should be more careful with communication, but not just with the language, with the content as well. That's why I'm really concerned about the content. Sometimes my students tell me, I have a problem with English language, and we practice the presentation, and the problem is with the content, how to organize their ideas. So we work with something that is not just English, we work with the message. Yes. And I think it's important that, because it's like, I have problems with my employees, one manager told me, because they were English and the way the problem wasn't the language, it was the way the things that he was saying were like, I mean, he wasn't like empathizing. So it's like we need to work with these ideas, but not just with the language.
Yeah.
Not everything language is responsibility.
No, I think language can be used as an excuse sometimes, and it's not that. It's an aspect of the language, yes, but it's, as you say, the structure and the content and the style. We Which brings me to writing, actually, because we spoke before about ChatGPT. I'll give you an example. I do have still a student who I used to support her doing her LinkedIn posts, and she would send them to me as a draft. I would edit them, send them back to her, and then she would post them. Now she doesn't bother because she uses Grammarly to check the grammar. She writes it first herself, but then she runs it through ChatGPT and says to ChatGPT, please improve this, make it clearer, or add some style. And she's quite happy with the revisions. Doesn't touch me at all. Can you see this happening now with lots of aspects of written language, that ChatGPT and other tools will be used for people to generate content?
I think that, for example, nobody has asked me to help them to write emails anymore. So probably it's because they use ChatGPT. But it is another tool. We need to adjust to this tool. And I think that is like an assistant that we may have. And probably it may bring different aspects of our teaching into place. So probably, when everybody uses ChatGPT to post something online, they may seem really similar style. So yeah. And you may find a niche in people who want to stand out from the crowd and need something more personal, more artistic, I don't know. But again, we need to use the tool, adjust to the tool, and also try to bring something new. Probably these kind of tools are really good to automatize things and create things. But when we are talking about creativity, I would like to think that we still have something to say. And again, we talked about connection before. Connection is something that makes the difference in terms of artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. Because the other day in a class, we were talking with my students. Do you think, because he was really emotional in the class, he cried, and something about, things related to their journey, learning languages. And we were talking at the end of the session, if he thought if he could be so emotional with artificial intelligence, like in a conversation with a robot instead of me. And I said that probably he would, but the thing is that when you just stop the conversation, the feeling afterwards may be different.
Yes, that's interesting, yeah.
You may have this kind of, in the moment, you may be like, got carried away and get really emotional, but then the feeling is not the same. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That again points to this relational communication, that what you build when you build a relationship, you almost build a new entity between the two people. Let's call it two people, okay, me and you. In between me and you now is a relationship, that something is almost another entity. It's almost something else. Even though we've never met, we build a connection, we build a relationship, the ideas flow. Now, not all of the words translate well, or not all the words are understood, but still, there's enough there that builds a bond or builds a connection. And that, whether you can have that with a machine, interesting.
I love this idea of entity. I love it. Fantastic. Yeah, new entity. And as a new entity, it develops by itself, the conversation. That's why chatting to people, you find out things about yourself that otherwise you wouldn't have found. Yeah. Fantastic, because when I thought about the interview, I'm saying things that I didn't think about them. But it's because of you, it's because of me, it's because of the entity. And that's brilliant, because you come up with ideas that, oh, wow, this is a really good idea. I haven't thought about it before, because I needed you to have this idea. That's great. Yeah. And I don't know if you need ChatGPT to have this idea, because this idea is about the relationship that we create. So you need this kind of environment to come up with this idea. And in the other, when you talk to ChatGPT, it's like one way and another way. But we don't create an entity together. Mm. We don't team up.
And I think that's very transactional, It's the same in personal relationships, isn't it? You know, people talk about marriage or relationships. You have a person A, a person B, person one, person two. But actually, together, they are an entity. They are a relationship between them. And, you know, it's not just about the two individuals who should be separate, but in some way connected. They should be independent, but they should be joint. You know, it's a very complex set of things you're asking a non-human to do. But actually, as a human, that's where our human qualities come through.
Yeah, that's why some people can bring something really positive. Mm-hmm. You and other people, the opposite. Like, you become a totally different person depending who you are with.
Yeah.
And that is really, really fascinating. And it's something that is so human. So again, the entity that you said, I love it.
I'm going to come back to you as an entity.
Okay.
Tell me how your students describe working with you. What is it about your way of working that students, well, I'll not prejudge it by saying enjoy, but what feedback do you get?
They talk a lot about mindset, about confidence, about learn by doing, about reproducing what they have to do in the real environment in our classes. Mm-hmm. And also they talk a lot about fun, about being at ease and connect and being relaxed. And I think that is really important because I have a child and I can see that he learns really, really fast. He's relaxed.
When he's relaxed, yeah.
Connected. And for me, every time that I have a conflict with him, the first thing that I try to do is not telling him off, is try to connect.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to be at the same level, look at his eyes and say, Gael, how can we solve this problem?
Yes.
This communication as well. But then if I tell him, what happened here, Kyle? Who broke this glass? Then it changes totally and he doesn't relate, he doesn't connect, he doesn't collaborate, and he doesn't cooperate. So I think that my students really appreciate this kind of like comfortable environment where they can make mistakes. Because sometimes like we have this kind of slogan everywhere, like make mistakes in order to improve. But at the end of the day, nobody wants to make mistakes.
No.
And there's no space, a safe space where you can make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would like to think that in my sessions, they can have this space and they can make mistakes in order to learn from them. It's the only way. There is no shortcut.
And then you can correct them. But, you know, yeah. If you, it's one of the problems I have with Slovak is that when I was first trying to learn Slovak, the person who was teaching me would correct every single mistake.
Yeah.
And in the end, I couldn't even get a word out because it was like the number six in Slovak, very difficult for me to say. Yeah. Now, Slovak will tell me whether or not I've said that well, but it's the number six, číslo šest, number six. And I tried and tried to get this right because I would go to football matches. I would listen very carefully to the announcer because it's what I used to do at my football club, reading out the teams, number one, number two, number three. And then I'd get to number six and I'd be repeating. No matter how much I tried, I could never quite say the number six correctly. But if you are corrected and stopped every time you try to say it, at some point, you go silent.
Totally. It's really important how you correct your students and how you give feedback. And it has to be like, again, holistic feedback, not just focusing in an aspect of the communication. So what I do, I ask them. In the first session, I ask them, how would you like that I correct you? It is very surprising for them, but for me, it's really effective.
Yeah.
Most of them, because, I mean, also it's related to their needs. If they want fluency, it depends what is your need. If your main need is accuracy or pronunciation, you may need to be corrected more often. But if you, most of my students, they want to get fluent. They want to communicate, get their message across. So most of them would prefer that I correct at the end of their intervention. So I take notes of the different aspects of their communication, and then I try to give them feedback. Not just isolating words, but in context, what are the main problems? So you may have problems pronouncing the past, or you are really good at using linking words that help you to flow. I don't know, you name it, different examples.
Yeah.
But that you get feedback, not only specific things, like, you know, more comprehensive.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I've been doing a lot of minimal pairs work with my students at the moment, which is a word list, you know, ship versus sheep. And I use the video about the Italian guy who went to Malta, which is rather stereotypical, but it shows you the importance of good communication. And
that's
it's funny. It's very adult, but it's funny. But using words in isolation is not the whole answer because the context has gone. And then when I put it in a sentence, they say, well, that makes sense. But on its own, you can only really be working on the sound production and listening to the sound, which is fine. It's part of it, but that's pronunciation. If you're developing fluency, those words have then got to be used in full sentences and then used in real life examples.
Mm-hmm. And one of the issues that we have is that there is too much information out there. And sometimes it's too much. So they need to focus. So we need to set priorities and goals and then go step by step. If you want to learn everything at the same time, it's going to be impossible.
Yes.
Then when you want to get fluency, you get more things. You may get grammar, you may get vocabulary, you may get pronunciation, but then you have a goal, and then little by little, we are just developing the skills that you need to get fluent. But if you want to improve everything at the same time, it's like Googling, I want to improve my English online, and you have like thousands of videos on YouTube. And how do I start?
Yes.
It's like the problem.
Okay, we need to start winding up because I promised you we wouldn't be too long. And as I expected, we are rattling on as we will. What is it about teaching English that you enjoy? What do you get out of it?
As you said before, English is, we were talking that it's a tool to share information, message, personal stuff. So I that's wonderful, because if you teach maths, you learn about maths all the time. But here I'm learning about languages, I'm learning about English. I'm an English student as well, not just an English teacher. I'm learning English every day, but also I'm learning from my students. That's why I keep a journal. And yes, every single day I write in my journal my main takeaway from my students.
Okay.
So for example, today I had a fantastic session with one student. He did a presentation about how to attract money. Mm-hmm. So he did a presentation, how to attract money. And it was so interesting, the presentation. I was taking notes all the time. I was like, wow.
I'm going to try that. Yes.
Now I need to try that. He's just 21 years old. And people have a lot of knowledge to share. And these sessions are an opportunity to share your knowledge. And I think that I learned a lot from them. So learning is my key motivation.
Yes. And then the enjoyment that you get from it. It's an occupation. It pays. It's a job. But actually, there is a cycle, isn't there? A circle that comes back to you. In using language, you build again. We're back to these relationships with people.
Content. I used to work as a manager in a company because, as I said before, I studied forestry. I didn't say that I studied forestry, but I said that I didn't study English at university when I was 18 years old. And at the beginning, I really liked the job because it was related with the environment. I still like environment. I still go outdoors and trek. But then I ended up as a manager of the company. And, you know, the aim of my company was like all the time, like having, you know, like networking with people, like dinners, lunch with politicians, these kind of things. It was all the time about money. And here money is important for me, but also you have this teaching effect that you help people to get there to one place or another. And I think that is fantastic. And the feeling is totally different now. Probably I'm not earning as much money as I did before, but the you know, I feel like more rewarded now. It's more
fulfilling. The rewards are different. And just a final point about language work, language teaching. We've talked about ChatGPT. What can you see just over the horizon? What's changing for you? What is different? What do you sense might be next?
I think that the classical approach of teaching would almost disappear, in the sense that, I mean, knowledge is out there.
Mm.
And I mean, teenagers are really, really good at self-learning. They can find everything that they want really easy. So we will have to create something not different, but probably bring this attitude that we said before. We will be able to bring more focus in their learning process and also try to, you know, inspire them, help them, and try to change their mindset. Mm-hmm. Because even though you may have all the information that you need, at the end of the day, you have to communicate. And by the time that you want to communicate, if you are not confident, you may not be able to do so. So probably this coaching aspect would be more and more important in the next period.
I think that's right. I think teachers as enablers, the fact that teachers are still learners, I still learn aspects of the English language. I was correcting my spelling over something yesterday. I kept trying to use a word and thought, that's not the right word. And I think I was contrasting some words for a student. So, you know, first language learners, and this has to be respected, learn all the time as well. But I think this concept that enabling others and ourselves to fulfill our potential. For me, that should be the essence of any education. It's literally going back to the Latin roots, educare, leading out from within. You know, I think we lost sight of that, and teaching became didactic. I have all the facts as the teacher. I'm going to share some of them with you. I'm going to hold some of them back because that's my power. I think really, now that we've got these other sources of information around us, which are very rich, people know that and they can get what they want from other places. What they want from you is the confidence building to and the validation, the reward that I'm doing a good job, I'm learning well, where can I go next? Where can I take this next? So that kind of visionary teacher, the enabler, the one who sees opportunities for growth, that for me is what makes good teaching.
I listen to them because they know more about themselves than you.
Yes.
So that's why, what is the best way of learning? Well, you tell me. We can co-create. It's about cooperation, as you said, creating this entity, as you said before, that can develop together. I really like this idea.
David, that's been fascinating. Thank you very much. We have gone on quite a long time, but that's fine. I hope people find the podcast of interest and of use. How do people make contact with you? If they're either interested just in talking with you or finding out about your work, can you give me your website links and everything?
I mean, I have LinkedIn, my name, David Cabezas. Okay. And on top of that, I have a website that is learningmindful.com. Learning Mindful. We have talked about awareness, so it's mindful stuff there as well.
Okay. Well, I'll put that as links. If you send me those, I think I've got the links, but if you send them me anyway, I'll put them in the podcast description. We've got to think of a title for the podcast, and there's been many things we've spoken about. So as I do the edit, I will be thinking of a title. I think entity might feature in there, and relationship.
I want to say that. Entity is fantastic, but I don't know if people would understand the idea of entity until they. So we need something probably catchy as well.
A bit more catchy, yes. Back to the marketing. All right. David, thank you very much indeed. Muchas gracias.
De nada. I have enjoyed
a great day.
I cannot believe that we have been speaking for 1 hour.
Yes.
So keep in touch, John. It has been a pleasure.
Okay. Yes.
It's also one thing about communication that is very important. Try to keep in touch nowadays.
Definitely. Well, all my podcast guests, I ask you to do a recommendation on LinkedIn because I use LinkedIn as my major source.
Okay, I will.
It's all about building those connections, building those relationships.
Of course.
Okay. So take care. Thank you very much. Dovidenia in Slovak. Goodbye. And adios.
Hasta luego. Adios, John. Bye-bye.